What's up, guys? This is Wes with Sin City Tactical, and this is the Sin City Tactical Show. With me, as always, Jax, and we also have Griff. What's going on, guys?
Hey, how's it been?
It's going. So first off, I'd like to start off by saying that anybody who's watched the Facebook or anything like that have now seen that Sin City Tactical and the Minnesota Overlanders have done a complete merge. So essentially, it's a rebranding for the Minnesota Overlanders. They are going to be assuming the name Sin City Tactical MN Division or the Minnesota Division. So branding is all going to be the same, which is a lot to do with trust. I trust these guys. I feel like they're going to represent my brand very well. We end goal when it came to the Minnesota Overlander side was to eventually merge. Of course, there was some CYA involved with protecting both parties. But after five strong months of doing these shows and only getting better and better as we go, I would say it's now definitely time that we merged everything together. So congratulations. Thank you guys for being a part of this. And we'll keep moving forward.
Indeed, brother.
Hell yeah.
Cheers to that.
Cheers to that. All right. So the first topic that we're going to get into today is going to be our Pro 2A news section. And with the Pro 2A news section, what I wanted to bring up is Biden's plan for gun control. So we're going to watch a clip. Once again, disclaimer, we don't own the rights to any of the videos played, and this is for news and media purposes only, but we are going to play this video talking about Biden's plan on guns. So let's get this pulled up.
10 days until President-elect Joe Biden takes office. We're taking a look at where the Biden administration stands on gun laws and what it means for Californians. Here with more on this is the executive director for San Diego County Gun Owners, Michael Schwartz. Good morning, Michael. How you doing?
Good morning, Allie. I'm doing well. Thanks for having me.
So anytime that there is a change in power, anytime a new administration comes in, we tend to talk about the Second Amendment and what gun owners need to know. And that's exactly what you're here to talk about this morning. Explain a little bit about what you are paying attention to.
Sure. I actually wish I had better news. You know, some have a very broad interpretation of what the Second Amendment protects. Some have a very narrow interpretation on what the Second Amendment protects. Most Americans fall somewhere on the spectrum in between those two extremes. The Biden plan is has a far narrower view of what the Second Amendment protects, probably the narrowest view we've ever seen from the federal government. And what I mean by that is, as a part of Biden's more strict gun control legislative package that he has for Congress, some of these bills are already being proposed, are already in writing, and Congress isn't even in session yet. They're already written and ready to go. But some of the items are they want to remove the protection for gun manufacturers from lawsuits. So what that would mean is that if somebody used a gun in the commission of a crime, that potentially the manufacturer of that firearm might be liable, might be able to sue them in court for that person misusing the product that they manufactured. Another one that they want is the ban of commonly owned semi-automatic rifles and normal capacity magazines. What that's commonly referred to as the assault weapons ban, which they had in the 90s, it expired. There have been a number of studies that showed that this type of ban on firearms really did nothing to stop crime or lower crime. They also want to stop law-abiding Americans from buying and selling guns without going through a dealer. That's commonly referred to as the universal background check. That's actually HR 167 right now, and they also want to implement a 7-day wait period, which is HR 125, so that anybody who purchases a firearm would have to go through a wait period. know, a lot of this sounds very familiar to Californians mm-hmm. because we're already in this. We already have to do almost all of those. And we're fighting to improve the system. The administration, the Biden administration, is taking a lot of what Californians already have to go through, and they're trying to spread it countrywide. They also want to expand the ban of gun ownership to include people who've only been accused of a crime, not convicted of a crime, but accused of a crime. So these are commonly referred to as red flag laws. And they want to nationalize the red flag laws. A few states already have red flag laws in place. California, again, is one of them, but they want to nationalize those red flag laws. Two things that were kind of interesting about his legislative package are, one, they want to hire an additional 200 ATF agents. That's the alcohol, tobacco, and firearm, the federal law enforcement branch. And with a lot of talk, especially from himself and his vice president, Kamala Harris, about defunding law enforcement and some of their concerns about law enforcement, I think it's very interesting that part of the package is to hire an additional 200 law enforcement agents, even though the trend with their party and the trend with their rhetoric is more of a defunding of law enforcement. The other thing that's very interesting, it's actually something that gun owners and non-gun owners and pro-Second Amendment and anti-Second Amendment folks, people across the board agree with. About 6 in 10 people who are killed and a gun is used, about 6 in 10 are suicides. So that's the vast majority of deaths where a gun is involved in the United States. 6 in 10 are suicides. That's huge. He has no plan for that. He mentions it, and he says he'd like to have a plan for it, but there's no specific plan for that. He has nothing to address that. I think it's something that all sides agree on and we'd like to work on together, or like to, you know, do something effective to improve the situation. But that's the one area where he really has no effective plan, no plan at all, no specifics.
And I think you touched on it, but, you know, a lot of these, like you say, are already in effect in California. So do you see there being any big change when it comes to us here in San Diego specifically?
Well, again, most of these we're already under the pressure to do some of these, and we're fighting back in court cases. So for the most part, there really won't be much of a change for Californians. They're taking California laws that we've already been fighting and showing to be ineffective and sometimes abusive to law-abiding gun owners, and they're spreading that out across the entire country.
Yeah, and I would imagine, I mean, you're going to continue to pay attention, continue to gather people together. I would imagine that you just want to be heard, want, you know, to have that conversation back and forth.
Well, we want to be more than be heard. We want to make sure that that we ensure that through public policy that gun owners are protected, they're not marginalized, that it's understood that that some of these gun laws disproportionately are used against people of color and the LGBT community, and that it's an important, not just an important part of our tradition, but it's an important part of our ability to defend ourselves and make sure that we're safe. So that's something that's very important for us. So we don't just want to be heard. We want to be very successful to make sure that we protect people.
All right. Well, I'm sure we will continue to check in with you as the administration goes and looks at several of these laws or potential laws, right? All right, Michael Schwartz, thank you so much for joining us this morning, providing some clarity, some insight for us.
Thank you, Allie.
All right, so short clip on that. When we talk about crimes committed in the country with guns, it's a lot less significant than what the media is trying to portray it to be. And one of my sources have stated that Congress said that commonly used firearms are protected under the Second Amendment. And there is a case on it. We would have to pull that up. Maybe we'll throw that case file in the description below so then you guys can do a little bit more research on that. Well, looks like we lost Griff. He should be back in a second. But gun crimes in America are a lot less common than I would say knives and things like that. Of course, I mean, armed robbery is a thing. But when we look at it, let's put this into perspective of the fact that look at the amount of people who have died from COVID in the past, what, year? That doesn't even come close. Gun crimes wise, doesn't even come close to the amount of bodies associated with COVID, right? And that's a totally different animal. But, you know, comparing apples to oranges, I guess I would say the spectrum of what they're trying to say is just inaccurate. And then they try to portray, you know, police officers killing people and things like that. And okay, we get it. The media is pushing that. But here's the thing, defunding the police is not going to do anybody any good. What's going to end up happening is you think martial law and the National Guard moving in on places is bad now? Wait till they're not showing up. Then see how this goes. I mean, what are your guys' thoughts?
Well, you want to start, Griff, or you want me to go?
Griff, I think you're muted.
Sorry about that. Go ahead, Jax. You can lead off.
All right. So, you know, obviously, as the source said, we have other case that we'll post in the description to do further research into and look into on all of our own time. But as far as what was put in the video itself that was shown for media purposes for education, I think realistically the fact that when it really comes down to it, they're trying to go after the gun manufacturers that in the bill for being able to sue them is ridiculous. But when it really comes down to it, again, that kind of goes back into the whole Second Amendment thing in the first place. It shall not be infringed upon. So, I mean, I don't know. It's kind of a toss-up. You know, I really don't see it getting too far, especially with how many Americans are pro-Second Amendment in the first place. So I guess we'll just kind of watch the story play out and hope for the best, you know?
Yeah.
Yeah, you know, this is something we've seen before in previous administrations. It's nothing new to us. The thing that really grinds my gears, it's how they're trying to throw away the immunity of fire manufacturers from being sued. So some Yahoo takes, we'll just say Colt, takes a Colt firearm, kills someone, and now Colt's responsible. In what bass ackwards world does that make sense? That would be like me suing Ford for driving drunk.
Right. And I agree with you. It's pretty outlandish. I mean, what's my fear is that it's going to start with them saying the manufacturers, then it's going to start going to your local gun shop employee who sold you the gun in the first place, right?
Yeah.
And how are they going to associate that with gun control? Oh, well, so-and-so is the one who sold them the gun in the first place. So it's got to be their fault, right? Because they didn't catch the warning signs beforehand. And, I mean, me personally, I work at a gun shop, Controlled Prayer Munitions. Anybody who watches the show probably knows that by now. It's pretty concerning to the whole situation when I'm putting firearms in people's hands that they could potentially try to turn around and come after me for it. You know, I don't like the thought process of that, but yeah, Griff, I think you got something else you want to say?
Yeah. I just want to mention that it's a lot like the children's book, Give Mouse Cookie. This is exactly how they act. You know, you give a mouse cookie, he'll want milk. You give him milk, you want a napkin, so on and so forth.
Absolutely. Jax?
Yeah. So my rebuttal to that would be, you know, Griff, you're absolutely right. Going from it being the manufacturer, then down to Wes's worry of the gun store owner or the person behind the counter, whoever sells, you know, said firearm, being in the line of fire with it. It's not that person, the gun store's, or the manufacturer's job to babysit and make sure that these people aren't doing stupid acts of violence and crime with these firearms. Now, granted, in one way, they make the guns, they sell them. That's not the problem. Problem is you have these idiots out there, though, that'll go and try to get a firearm in an illegal way, whether it's stealing it or whatever. But even then, when it comes down to it, that doesn't fall back on the gun stores, the sellers, or the manufacturer.
In logic, that's what you would think, but you know, America, we don't do things logically here. Of course not. Why would we do that? It's very stereotypical control. Like I said on the previous podcast and before that, the CIA does this exact same thing in other countries to push countries in a way that we want them to. We remove the leaders that we don't like and help place in leaders that we do like and make them conform essentially to America to keep a stronghold on the world. That's how we stay a superpower. But now the sad part is, and I don't feel like enough Americans are realizing it, that is exactly what they're doing to our own country. They're taking leaders out that they don't want. They're trying to place leaders that they do. And look at exactly what happened. Perfect example. When Iraq attacked Kuwait, right? Something happened which forced an issue. America intervened. We literally went into war and still are having issues with this country to this date. Specifically, we still have people overseas right now. Half of our soldiers are still overseas dealing with an issue that wasn't our problem to begin with. You know what I mean? Like, that's where my problem is. And what do? We took out their leader, put it all over our news, and said, oh, we got them. Da, da, da. We're going to help them gain freedom, and we're going to help them do this and do that. Hence, Operation Iraqi Freedom, right? How did that work? We ended up getting attacked later. Again, now we're fighting basically the same regime again. Of course, there's different groups involved and stuff like that. But essentially, what we did the first time didn't work, and now we're doing it again. But the point I'm making is they've brought it now to our own soil and are trying to brainwash all of us to an ideology of this will be better. History doesn't show that it will be.
And I agree with that. Right? Got anything? Griff, you got anything? I mean, I'm kind of on the same page with Wes there when it comes down to it.
Nope, I completely agree. I was just thinking that this would be a great time to move on to the next segment.
Absolutely. And you would sue the spoon manufacturer. You get more with a spoon than you do a fork.
Mm-hmm. Indeed.
All right, moving on into the next topic here. All right, so we're going to get into our tactical gear items or tactical gear review. So let me get what I want to show you guys out. I think I may have showed this in a full tool set reveal before, but like I said, I'm going to be going through the toolkit and showing everybody individual items. So this is the Boost Steady. Boost Steady kit, what is inside. Brushes, you've got brass, you've got nylon, two different types of nylon, and a steel, and then you have a bunch of picks, You got a plastic pick so you don't mar up your gun. You've got some metal picks to also work on your guns with. I keep this kit in here. It's nice and small, travel size, works really good on the AR platform. There's a lot of little grooves and things that you got to dig into. So having a kit like that is very useful. Inside that kit as well, I keep like hammers and punches and armors, wrenches and things like that. But it's not just for building. That also allows me to do cleaning. Actually, and this will tie right into what we're talking about. I'm going to show the toolbox again just because of a special thing that happened today. Go Pack Go. Heading to that NFC Championship game. So happy about that. This is my gunsmithing box here. And, yeah, so, like, one of the things that I keep in it, like I said, that boost study kit, armorer's wrench, that laser bore sighter that I showed in a previous episode, hammer and punch kit, headlamp. Always good to have extra light, no matter what. I keep a pair of snips in there. The reason behind the snips is sometimes when you're putting springs and stuff in, you want to refine how they work. So I'll snip some of the detent springs just a little bit to make things a little bit smoother. That's all preference based, really. And then universal vise block. Also made for the 1911. So it has the takedown tool on there as well for the 1911. And that's just the basic kit part of it. I also keep like a cleaning mat in there and some other little odds and ends. Let me see the top tray. Oh, I know I showed this on a previous episode, but I want to show it again because I had some customers come into the store and they had lost some springs and stuff when they were doing a build. So as you can see, this thing is literally very small, little blue kit. It opens up into panels. Well, I don't know if you can tell, but inside I keep springs, detents, the buffer tube plunger, mag release springs, all that stuff in this little kit. So no matter what, if I lose one, I have multiple extras. So then I can keep moving. Like, actually, for example, we were cleaning the living room earlier, and I found a detent underneath the couch. I've also got, like, gas block pins and roll pins and things like that in there as well. So tiny little carrying case. And I've got at least enough springs and detents and pins to build, like, 10 ARs out of this little kit, as long as I have all the bigger parts. So that's a nice thing to have. And then this is kind of like Neosporin. Griff, I believe you got one of these as well. It's the Doc Spartan. It's like a deodorant stick kind of in consistency, but it's like a Neosporin, antiseptic and pain-relieving cream that you can put on as well. So I keep that in there just because you never know. You might cut yourself on something sharp. But that's what I have for the tactical gear item of my choice, and we'll dig into that kit a lot more in detail throughout the episodes. I would like to move on and let Jax, go ahead and show his tactical gear item.
Indeed. So, you know, a little while back, Wes went his plate carrier. Granted, I have mine rigged up right now with my Flick attached to it. So I'm going to go ahead and open the Flick up. So you can see exactly what it looks like. It's got plenty of space for patches, both on front and on the back. You can rig a bunch of stuff up to it. You got your drag handle, front pouch pocket here for maps, notebooks, pens, and see here, running pen in that pocket. We've got tactics, techniques, and procedures. nice little individual safety card here with a bunch of different charts on it, wind chill factor, more kind of in-depth sort of CLS type safety card. And then a small little notebook there that comes in handy for taking down notes, whatever the case may be in the field. But to go further into depth, we're going to go ahead here and close this up and just tell you a little bit more about it. So, set that off to the side. And drop that down. Bear with me 1 second. All right. So it's made by Condor. It is their tactical vest. More specifically, let me go ahead. I believe it's Cyclone model. Yep, the Condor Cyclone lightweight plate carrier. Comes in multicam, black and tan, which the multicam also has like your OCP, OD green, sort of multicam style, which is nice. So you got two or three options there. And there's a fourth, but it doesn't come exactly in that multicam color. It has adjustable and removable full front pocket with snapping hook and loop closure, which I showed you. Molly all over hook and loop panels on the front and back, and it is made here in USA. Now, I'm going to round up the price and say it's about $190 after, you know, everything's all said and done. It's probably going to be a little bit more with shipping and handling, but it's listed at $189.99, so round up $190.
Awesome. So on there as well on the screen, you'll see details on it and the features as well. And it does look like the multicam black is not available right now, but it says that that pattern is an additional $8 for going with the black multicam. So perfect. That's awesome. Yeah, I love my plate carrier. Maybe we'll go into that later on more extensively. And yeah, plate carrier is a big thing to have. You can even go to bowtack.com and get some plate carriers. They're not going to have molly webbing and all that stuff on the front, and they're not going to be super good quality, but you can get a vest set and front and rear plates for $100 at a level 3A plus package. So the vest you could even get for like $15. Literally, it's just a pocket in the front, a pocket in the back, throw the plates in and be good to go. So if you have multiple family members and you have to get out quickly for whatever reason, you can buy a good amount of those and have some type of extra protection for your family. All right, let's move into Griff's tactical gear item.
All right, so I chose this tactical gear item this week because of the ammo shortage and the new wave of first-time fire owners, and that is the Hera H3T AR-15 magazine. Now, the Hera magazine comes in black, tan, and OD green, made from fiberglass reinforced polymer. I can usually find them online for $10 to $12, which, as many of us know, is even cheaper than some of the leading competitors like Magpul, Lancer, and Hex Mag. These are made out in Lower Franconia, which is one of the 7 districts in Bavaria, Germany. It's located in the very northwest of the country. A little bit of trivia there. It was the same town that a Mr. Wilhelm Conrad Röntgen was born in. And this man discovered X-rays back in 1895. but these are all made out in Germany. Very nice, strong quality. Stupid cheap. These are the only magazines I personally run. And I'm kind of sad that they don't get as much recognition as all the other brands we have that are made in the USA, because these really are excellent magazines and dirt cheap.
I like that there's a window on them. Usually yes, the window mags cost more from Magpul. They're like $17.99 or something.
If you could change back my camera, I'll give you a better look at that. Whereas the standard PMAG windows, there's usually about there. We have a nice, stupid, big, crystal clear window right in the back.
That's awesome. Yeah, definitely. You know, I literally have buckets of magazines around the house. And, you know, it. One of those things is counting. Like we talked about in previous episodes, as a person without a class 3 license to have fully autos, and I don't have any 1985 pre-ban fully autos either, semi-auto for the civilian is something that you got to learn how to count. I think you should learn how to count when you're shooting, right? I know, yeah, let me adjust my phrasing there.
No,
when shooting is a big thing.
No, I was laughing at Geister. Apparently, I'm getting really good at spending his money.
Yeah, I see that.
Wes, I was going to let you know, Mr. Geister 69 yep. happens to be the special guest I was telling you about that's watching.
Oh, okay. Perfect. Well, thank you for watching. We definitely appreciate you hopping in and, stay tuned. There is a special section that you'll be involved in. So stay tuned for that. But counting rounds when shooting, especially in a home defense situation, A, is going to keep you more calm in that situation because you're having to focus on something. You know what I mean? So keeping count, too, in a big firefight situation keeps you in the fight. If you run out of ammo midfield or whatever the case may be, you're in a bad spot.
Right, which is why I really like these nice, big, crystal clear backed Hera mags, where once that's in my firearm, I can bang away, slightly rotate it, I can see everything. It's not like the PMAG where, okay, hang on, let me take a look, all right, get back on target.
Let me ask you this, what color is the follower?
The follower is black itself, but you know we're all handy guys around here. You know, a little bit of a blaze orange shaker can, that'll solve it.
Right, and you picked up on my thought process on that, right? If I have that big window and I'm watching bullets move up, when I see bright orange in that window, is going to signify to me, hey, we're running out. Be ready for the running out of it.
As you're speaking, there I shorted it by 5, and you can see the black follower right there, the rounds, and the spring.
Awesome. Yeah, I definitely like that, that's for sure. Definitely something that I'm going to have to look into a little bit more. But to keep the show rolling, we are going to move into the next topic here, and Red Button News.
Indeed. So for this week's Red Button News here, I went ahead and did some more looking into things and made a couple of personal contacts to some battle buddies of mine and found out that they are currently down the capital here in Minnesota. But this one, I believe, deals with more of the D.C. situation. So it says failure of imagination. National Guard absence at Capitol riots shows lack of preparation after heavy-handed BLM response. Posted yesterday at 3:56 p.m. Updated today at 4:04. As Insurrectionists laid siege to the U.S. Capitol on January 6th, attacking police and ransacking the halls of Congress. A question reverberated on TV and in living rooms around the nation. Where's the National Guard? The quarry loomed as rioters bashed into the cradle of democracy, hunting for Vice President Mike Pence amid a chant that called for his hanging. It echoed when lawmakers ducked for cover and barely escaped to the Capitol's inner sanctions. Or sanctums, excuse me. It was still unanswered as Capitol Police Officer Brian Sicknick was bashed in the head, killing him, and as Ashley Bobbitt, an Air Force veteran radicalized by the, try to pronounce that word, but we'll keep moving. Conspiracy movement tried to crawl through a broken window. And was shot by or dead by police. Where was the National Guard? Investigators eventually will provide full answers, said Richard Cohen, a history professor emeritus at the University of North Carolina at Chapel Hill, who specializes in defense and national security issues. But he said the lack of a backup force while Congress tallied electoral votes boils down to four words: a failure of imagination. Because failing local authorities underestimated the threat, National Guard troops were not poised to respond. Cohen, another expert, said that mistake was compounded by paralysis once the siege began. With those same officials nervous that a show of military force would prompt political blowback.
Looking at this picture here, you know what bothers me about this?
What's that?
Pro-Trump rioters protest inside the U.S. Capitol on January 6th, 2021 in Washington, D.C. Demonstrators breached security and entered the Capitol as Congress debated the A-2020. That's a typo on somebody's part. The 2020 presidential election electoral vote certification. They're so quick to jump and say pro-Trump. And as we discussed in the last show, people wearing MAGA hats backwards have identified as being BLM or NFAC or Antifa or not Trump supporters, but the media outlets, and I'm not going to get into sources on that, but there was a lot of speculation on it all not being Trump supporters. And even in this photo right now that you're looking at, what do you see? Do you see any people carrying weapons besides the officers here and potentially this guy here? No. You see a flag, you see a backpack, a camera. I don't see weapons.
Yeah, I don't either. And you know, the sad part about it, bro, is I agree with you. And I was talking with Griff offline about this before we even had the pre-show meeting. You know, it's funny how they can consider this a violent protest, but let's go back into, you know, even early to late last year when everything in Minneapolis was taking place and police burned down and Target stores and everywhere else was being looted and monuments that are not even essential but that are standing on U.S. soil that represent this country's history for other reasons than these people seem to think they do were being vandalized and torn down. So if this is what they consider violent and terroristic,
absolutely. I have a comment I would like to make real quick on that. And like you said, it's funny that this is being looked at as a violent protest when literally Grandmaster Jay arrested and everything else when he had his NFAC buddies running around town and blocking streets and everything else, full tactical gear, rifles in hand, granted, a lot of them Smith & Wesson M&P 22s because, you know, stovepipes and stuff and failure to feeds and all that fun stuff. Pointing them at law enforcement officers. That's a violent protest. They're out there looking for a problem. Or how many accidental discharges happened at these protests? Has an accidental discharge happened by a pro-Trump supporter? If there is one, please leave a comment in the sections below giving evidence to it so then I can look that up and see exactly what footage you're pertaining to. But when I see NFAC doing accidental discharges, and I wish I could put a rifle in my hands right now and show the this is my rifle. The bolt is back. This is a bullet. Watch. I put it in. Smack. Boom. Shot myself in the head. No. Guns don't work like that. First of all, and I would know this with working with guns and stuff like that, and this was proven to me as well by coworker of mine that is called a soft strike of the firing pin. It will make a dent on the back of the bullet's primer, but a soft strike, very, very unlikely to actually set the round off. Okay. So when the bolt goes forward, it's not going to go bang unless the hammer penetrates the firing pin into the actual primer of the round. Perfect example, and this is what makes me laugh about the situation. When you put the magazine in, what do you have to do, Griff?
Well, normally you have to drop the bolt.
Yeah, so when you have to charge the weapon, that takes the bolt carrier group, pulls it back, pushes forward with the bullet to load it into the chamber. Am I wrong?
No, and really the only guns I can think of off the top of my head that operate in a way that they think most guns operate are mainly open bolt submachine guns like the MP40 or I want to say the Sten operates the same way, where it's a fixed firing pin, open bolt.
Really old shotgun.
Right.
And the only open bolt ones that I've ever been behind are the 240, 249 saw, and then the Ma-Deuce 50 cal. And even then, when you're ripping back on, you know, the Ma-Deuce and you're letting the bolt fly forward, that's not setting the 50 cal off until you push the butterfly trigger. So,
right. It, essentially, what it is, it's guns that we can't ever get our hands on unless we're in service.
Right. Or you have special licensing and put a lot of money into it.
Right.
So my rant is over on that. I just think it's funny that, you know, we're out here creating violent protests by holding American flags and stuff. And, you know, America things, but okay.
Yeah. You know, but that's the other thing, too. It's funny that it was actual country-loving patriots that are being labeled as violent, you know, protesting criminals. And let's just go, like I said, let's go back a few months and weigh your options and you tell me which situation was worse. Anywho, before we move on to the next subject here, I do want to say what's up to 702 HVAC and Robert, as always, it's good to hear from both of you.
Yep. Thank you for joining in. And yeah, let's keep it moving on to the next one.
All right. So indeed, it's that time of the show again, boys. CLS training.
All right.
Woohoo.
Ooh. All right, so I think I'm going to bust the guy's balls here. I got a couple of questions already picked out, and I think I'm going to ask Wes the first question.
Hang on, let me put on my smart guy glasses. Okay.
All right. You are in a tactical field care situation, not under enemy fire. The soldier is lying on his back. He is breathing and is alert. He has no serious extremities or head. You see an entrance wound on the casualty's chest. What should you do now? A. Seal the chest wound and check for other open chest wounds on his back. B. Apply an emergency bandage to the wound on his chest and begin rescue breathing mouth-to-mouth resuscitation. C. Perform a needle chest decompression. Or D. Insert a nasal pharyngeal airway to the casualty's nostril.
Repeat the actual question part. I know the answer part, but the questions.
The question was, you are in a tactical field care situation, and you are not under enemy fire. Soldier is laying on his back. He is breathing and is alert. He has no serious wounds to his extremities or head. You see an entrance wound on the casualty's chest. What should you do now?
Well, first I would, now, of course you'd ask me this question, something that I don't have a bunch of experience in, but if I try to think of this logically, and you know, America, we don't logically do things, but I'm going to try to do so. First I would try to see if there's a, if it's a through and through. I think that's important to know. Try to see if it's a through and through. And then you said he's breathing and alert.
Yep.
So resuscitation and CPR is not needed necessarily because he's breathing and he's alert. So check the for a through and through or not, right? Make sure that it's not or is. And then I guess I would the options were chest seal, nasal, whatever you said.
Here, I'll reread your options for you.
All right.
Answer A is seal the chest wound and check for other open chest wounds on his back, which is basically the through and through. B, apply an emergency bandage to the wound on his chest and begin rescue breathing mouth to mouth. C, perform needle chest decompression. Or D, insert a nasal pharyngeal airway into the casualty's nostril.
Well, I'm not going to do the nostril thing because he's breathing and he's alert. The bandage doesn't seem logical right now either. And I don't need to resuscitate and CPR and all that fun stuff. So I guess A would be my answer.
And you'd be correct on that after process of elimination. You want to seal the chest wound and check to make sure that it's not a through and through.
Ding, point for me. I wish we had some way to put points on the screen. I'll figure that out on another show.
I'll keep track of points.
All right, Griff's up.
All right, so Griff, here's your question. And this is kind of the COVID 6 feet rule CLS training that I'm going to start giving you and Dad. So,
oh, boy.
A casualty has suffered a penetrating open chest wound to the left side of his chest and no other wounds. Which of the following is most likely to happen if the wound is not properly treated? A, his right lung will collapse. B, his left lung will collapse. Or C, both of his lungs will collapse.
It was a penetrating chest wound to the left side, correct?
Yep.
Oh, boy. Well, I'm not a medical professional by any stretch of the imagination. I would want to say the left would collapse, but being that the thoracic cavity is the cavity for the entirety, and if enough air gets in, it could collapse both lungs, so whichever one is both lungs. And before I give your answer, I want to shout out Rob for his answer.
Yes, I will shout out Rob as well for his answer. That was a great try there. Throw him some plates, definitely, if he's getting shot in the chest. that could be heavily avoided with plates.
Yeah, just give them the old Pulp Fiction treatment.
He gave you guys a Warzone Call of Duty answer. Okay. Revive him, throw him some plates, give him some guns. That's funny. I like it.
Right. So the correct answer would be B, his left lung will collapse. Your answer was C, both lungs will?
Yeah.
Okay. So, yeah, the correct answer is actually B, the left lung will collapse.
Wait. I want to answer D, A lung will collapse.
Right. Look, 1 point me, no points Griff.
Hey, I'll admit it.
Let's move on.
At least for this week.
Well, you know what that means. Anything happens, Wes is the guy to save me.
No. That's not a me thing.
Hey, no, you're the guy with more points.
I have 1 point. I'm ready for my next question.
All right. You want your next question?
I do. Let's see if logic is going to benefit me on this one.
I feel like we need to get the non-trademark Jeopardy music going.
Yeah, right. Do-do-do-do-do-do-do-do-do-do-do. All right. Perfect. That's the one we're going to go with for you. All right, Wes. Which of the following best describes a combat lifesaver? A non-medical soldier who provides life-saving measures as his primary mission. B, a non-medical soldier who provides life-saving measures as his secondary mission. C, a medical soldier who provides life-saving measures as his primary mission. Or D, a medical soldier who provides life-saving measures as his secondary mission.
Mint flavored. Lifesavers. Okay, let's see. Well, it's not going to be... Okay, I want the question. The question one more time.
Which of the following best describes a combat lifesaver?
Okay, so I'm eliminating the non-medical answers right away. A and B is not going to be it. So I would say C, because his primary mission would be the medical. C, final answer. Lock it in. No deal.
The banker the correct answer is actually B, a non-medical soldier who provides life-saving measures as a secondary mission.
Huh.
Okay. Because CLS is not a combat medic. So basically, you're trained in using items out of the IFAC to get your battle buddy patched up and out of the war zone to an actual combat medic facility. And as the soldier's first mission, obviously, you're trained to fight back. But in a combat lifesaver situation, that's your second mission. If you're under fire.
Yes, I guess that makes sense. Patch him up, get him to the actual medic. That makes sense. Okay.
And I'm going to shout out both Geister 69 and 702 HVAC guy, a combat life or lightsaber. Yes.
It's got to be red, you know, red for blood, less visual impact, good for cauterizing. Just don't push hard. You might cut everything off.
Right.
Star Wars movies, they'll tell you that.
Exactly.
No try, only do. all right. Well, does Griff get another question to even the score, or are we done?
Yes, I am going to give Griff another chance here.
All right, redemption.
Yeah, let's see if I can redeem it, but either way, after this, we should move on to the next segment.
Absolutely. Indeed. All right. So, Right there. There we go. Which of the following is not one of the three phases of tactical combat casualty care? A, care under fire. B, tactical field care. C, tactical evacuation care. Or D, tactical mobile surgical care.
D.
You'd be final correct. Answer. It is D.
I mean, I mad props to the combat field medic that can do surgery under fire. But last time I checked, no one's done that just yet.
All right. We'll
You're
see.
Not wrong about that, right?
1-1.
Woo!
We can, yeah. Woo! Go Pack Go. We can play this game on the next episode. But the fun sections are coming now. Let's see. First shout out and sponsor, we're going to talk about Controlled Paramunitions, local gun shop, 7350 West Cheyenne Avenue, suite number 106, Cheyenne and 95. Local to Las Vegas, come down, check it out. Open 7 days a week, 10 to 7 on Monday through Saturday, 11 to 5 on Sundays. And then I want to thank Wendy from Sight Shooter. She sponsors us to do these shows by financially backing us on Patreon. So awesome for that. Thank you very much, Miss Wendy. And hopefully we can get her back on the show again soon. And then, of course, TAC Pack. You can use our code SCT Tactical for a free mystery grab bag. And, yeah, check them out. Jax?
All right, so I'm going to go ahead and shout Wendy out as well. When we had her on the show the last time, she answered a lot of questions, especially about her courses and what she does and kind of her background. So it'll be awesome to have more questions answered, especially from our viewers and listeners. Secondly, I want to go ahead and shout Wes out. You know, again, like you said at the beginning of the show, it's been 5 months since we started this. We finally merged it all together. Proud to be now fully Sin City Tactical, but even more so, Sin City Tactical Minnesota Division.
Absolutely.
Thirdly, I want to go ahead and put out the TACX Pro gear. As of right now, we are still flying under the code Overlander25. To get you 15% off your purchases at National Concealed Carry Association.com on gear over there, as well as 25% off your purchases at TACX Pro Gear. And then this is kind of where I'm going to wrap this up, but here's the future of our brand. And pleasure being here with you guys.
As well. And I'm going to be shouting out G3 Survival like I do every week. He, in my opinion, makes the finest leather firearms goods on the entire market. I work with him very closely. Little known secret is that I help design all the tooling for his designs. And I'm happy to say we are currently working on some new products and even some special personally designed by me designs that he'll be implementing. His newest addition right now is the leather finger strap for the forend that is meant to help mitigate your muscle climb and recoil and all that happy shiz. Right now we are also in works with doing chamber flags, and he just recently sent me a photo of a suppressor cover.
Ooh.
Oh, and looks like Geister, who is G3 Survival, wants us to show the Warhammer Shockwave wrap that he did. And guys, for those that are listening, please go to his G3Survival.com website, not the Etsy. Etsy has been, unfortunately, taking down a bunch of his products. His actual .com is controlled by him, so nothing will be going away from there.
Indeed. Man, it's awesome to have G3 here with us.
Man, those are some good-looking parts.
Indeed.
Yeah, I have a 590M, which I'm going to have to get with him on, 590M. It's not the Shockwave, but obviously the front end is going to be the same, so I'll probably have to get something in the works there to get that going. This is awesome.
Oh, and I did quickly forget. He just recently finished up some Scorpion parts for the CZ Evo Scorpion. Or, what? Sorry, Scorpion Evo 3.
That is awesome. See, and this is something I want right here, too. The SBA 3 cheek weld covers. That would be real nice. Give you a little bit of extra. Uh-oh, no. I'm going to get myself in trouble. We got to keep it moving.
All right, let's move it. Next segment before Wes spends more money.
I was going to say, oh, God. Wait. There was one that I saw. This. I want this. But I want that on a SBA 3 cheek weld, and I want it in tan or FDE. Because as you'll see, FDE, SBA 3, if I can get a Mjolnir in FDE, cheek weld, bro, I want that. I want that bad.
Oh, looks like he can do it.
Okay, well,
you can make it happen.
Well, you know how to get in contact with him.
Yeah, absolutely.
We should work continue on with the show though. Otherwise, we'll be here all night.
Yeah. All right, next topic.
All right, so we're going to be implementing a new section of the show called EDC How and Why. Name is subject to change. This will be a segment that we talk about various EDC products, EDC philosophies, and situation type things, such as, let's say, for example, if you're a person that loves to go running, what sort of EDC things can you take running? Or what can you pack in your briefcase when you go to the office? Not for illicit opportunities, but for self-defense EDC type scenarios. And I'm going to start off this maiden voyage here with the importance of having a good holster. Now, I've carried every possible way. I've carried small back, 4 o'clock, 3 o'clock, 2 o'clock, appendix, cross draw, shoulder holster, what have you. I always advocate people to start cheap. Buy a small variety of holsters and, you know, carry in one way for a while, then carry another way for a while and see what works best for you. Once you get comfortable, invest in a good quality holster. That is absolutely paramount, but more so, train with it. Personally, I carry appendix using a tier one concealed holster. They're not exactly cheap. They run, if I recall correctly, $100 to $150, and they're custom made to order. But using that and training with that, I have full confidence in both my abilities and the quality of the holster to protect not only my life, but the lives of my loved ones that I'm currently with.
Question. So you do Glock matches and instructing and stuff like that, and RSOing on these matches and things. So when we talk about holsters being extremely important, which it is, there's a line between inside the waistband, outside the waistband, having a CCW, not having a CCW. So with the EDC side of things, if you don't have a CCW permit and you're forced to outside the waistband carry, what would you think is the best position to carry in to try to minimize snag, I guess I would say, from maybe, you know, say you're at a restaurant and you're open carrying and you need to be able to get your firearms, you know, because some bigger guys got guts and stuff that get in the way. And I know, at least for myself, I like to carry in like the 4 to 5 o'clock area, not completely small the back, but I like to carry in that range. And then at work, I'll carry at a 3 o'clock position. Just because I'm carrying a bigger gun and I need it to be visible to people that are coming in, so crime doesn't happen. What's your thoughts on that?
My thoughts on that would be, well, just like what you're comfortable with, the 4 o'clock, 5 o'clock position. So I find, especially with larger guys, it keeps away from the love handles that men just seem to naturally accumulate. It allows a easier draw. It's more snag free, as most of the cuts of our shirts tend to hike up around the hip, which would clear the gun. But also, you toss on a overshirt or an overcoat and it reduces printing as well.
Absolutely. So I don't like talking bad on companies in particular, but I do need to kind of do a PSA here real quick on holsters. Me being a bigger guy, I thought the Urban G3 holster would be good. And yeah, I made a mistake. And I want to explain why. So there's a magnet down at the bottom. Being a bigger guy, it's got like a little belt loop. It's supposed to sit down underneath the pants and you're supposed to be able to open and rip up. And, whoa, that kind of looks dirty, huh? all right, well, we're not going to do that. But you get the point that I'm making. This thing is super bulky. And I tried to keep this behind my pocket, like my pants pocket. Because I figured if I had something in the pocket, it would also help kind of camouflage the fact that I had that holster on. But what I come to realize was if you have a gun in there fully loaded, I was carrying a Glock 43X in this holster. And the weight of the gun would pull the front of my pants down. But I had to keep the belt loose enough to be able to do the retraction motion to get it to pull up and through the pants to open up essentially like this. And what I found was I was pulling up my pants more and trying to keep the gun in place that it just wasn't right. You know, that's one of those things where working at the gun store, I've picked up on. When people walk into the shop, how they walk in, I'm watching them in that sense. As soon as they walk in, is your hand in your pocket, just one hand, and it seems like you're bowing your arm out. Okay, now it looks like you're carrying something. Well, why is your hand like that? You know what I mean? If it stays like that for too long, I start questioning it. So pulling up the pants constantly all the time, trying to keep myself adjusted, wasn't ideal. I wanted it to look like I had nothing on and would have been comfortable. So I don't recommend that holster.
Actually, I do want to get into the behaviors when it comes to holsters. Like you said, one hand in the pocket, hands bowed out. That just screams that guy's carrying. That's why I like my appendix holster, because I naturally like to keep my left hand in my pocket. Not only because that's where my wallet is, but also if anything were to happen, my left hand's already there to hike up my cover shirt, expose my firearm, give me a nice clean draw.
Right.
But that's honestly a game I like to play when I'm out and about, is let's spot the bad carry people. And I don't like the high scores I get.
Right. I do that every day. I'm constantly looking. And the CCW training, you'll learn situational awareness where naturally you'll start picking up on things like that. And it's funny because most people don't know situational awareness as much as they should. And then you get looked at funny by family members when you're like, no, I got to sit in that seat over there at the restaurant because my back's to the wall and I can scan and see, you know, entry points, exit points. I've already planned out three different routes out, you know, and I'm not doing it like being a weirdo sitting in the corner going, ooh, okay, if I have to run, I'm going that way. No, it's just something that over time you naturally, you just do it and it takes a couple of seconds. You've already gone, okay, area is good. And then you are watching movement.
Right.
It's a big thing. And then you start catching on to who's carrying, who's not carrying, and if they hide it well or not. But most of the time, even if you're concealed carrying, you'll print lightly, but you'll still print in some form.
Right.
Yeah.
Jax, do you have anything to throw out on this topic?
Yeah. When it comes to carrying, anywho, I know exactly what you're talking about. We've been around each other for 6 years now. So I've kind of seen, especially you, go through the stages of carrying. And so when Wes, you're talking about that G3 Urban holster, I've seen previews for that. It looked like a decent holster, but personally, the tier one holster that Griff's using right now, if you're going with a inside the waistband form of carrying, that would be something I myself would even recommend. It not only does it come in many different models to fit, you know, your specific firearm, but I believe, and Griff, correct me if I'm wrong on this, it's a little bit extra if you're paying for a add-on for a spare mag holder.
Nope, not at all. It's all a single unit. You have your holster and your spare mag holder roped together with a shock cord. What you do pay extra on is if you want a premium kydex, which just means camouflage pattern. But the one thing I do want to comment on with the Urban Carry holster, their deployment technique where you rip the entire holster out and present the gun, I've seen countless times where, you know, that's great, and it goes rocketing across the room. A lot of good that'll do.
Right.
And Wes, you got something?
I do. So being a bigger guy, appendix carry is just not a thing for me.
Mm-hmm.
I'm not able to do it comfortably, so I don't. So even with trying to conceal carry, it's a 3, 4, 5 o'clock position with that. With the exception, and we're going to have to mark this dark, dirty humor, explicit, I guess, when it comes down to the editing. The only gun that I will appendix carry is the Glock 40. So when you go to the club, you know, it's a 10mm super long barrel to the front. And yes, ladies, that's my Glock, not my ha
joke. Is that a gun in your pants, or are you just happy to see me?
Yeah, exactly. No, like I said, it's my Glock, not my...
Well, why do you think I decided to buy a 12-inch barrel 500?
Exactly. You know, 44 mag Hunter compensator built onto it, you know. That's your good appendix carry guns. She won't be happy later, but...
Compensated.
Okay. Yeah. Well, you know. I almost said a joke. I'm not gonna go there.
Before we get ourselves in trouble, we should probably continue.
Yes. All right. Well, moving on into the next one. It's going to be a...
And let me quickly double check here. This is our Patreon message, right?
Absolutely.
That it is. Now, I do want to preface this Patreon message by saying this is by no means a call to action. Again, not a call to action. Our Patreon message comes from Thomas Jefferson today. The Tree of Liberty must be refreshed from time to time with the blood of patriots and tyrants. To me, that talks about never giving up our fight for freedom. And always remember that if it's worth it, we have to fight for it.
The best things in life don't come easy. I guess that's my patriotic message. The best things in life do not come easy. And freedom is not free.
Right.
100%. Well, all right, guys. Thank you for sticking it out this long. We appreciate you guys tuning in.